right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining us on this April 17th, 2021. Pleased to be joined by the gift that keeps on giving, Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. Woody, how you doing, bud?
Good morning, Anthony. How are you this morning?
Doing all right. What's going on? How was your week? I know things have been hopping at the shop, and things are going well.
Golf is off the charts, folks. I don't think we have an appointment available until the end of May.
Nice. Jeez. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it. It's really difficult with the supply chain issues, and golf is booming. And it's sort of like this sort of, you know, catch 22. You got golfers who want to golf, and now we're having supply chain issues. But it's just nice that business is off the charts.
I was talking to one of the big manufacturers the other day, and they were saying that they've brought in extra staff. They're going 24/7.
Right.
And they can't catch up. They keep falling behind. With more orders are coming in than they can possibly produce. Forget about being able to get the product to build and ship out. They simply cannot put it together fast enough.
Right. I mean, that's a good problem, right? I mean,
it's a great problem. It's great for the health of golf, right? That means golf is healthy, and I think a lot of people are getting back into the game and realizing how great a game it was, and new people starting the game. It's fantastic for golf.
Yeah, and people are walking, and they're, you know, like I remember when the pandemic first happened, and you couldn't get. I mean, you probably could have sold your push cart for $5,000 if you wanted to, but because even those things were short right off the bat. So people know that it's a healthy healthy thing to do. It's a lifestyle choice. Golf couldn't be in a better place in those terms.
I wish I had bought like 100 push carts.
Exactly.
I would have sold every single one. We don't sell push carts, but
no,
I mean, it just I can't tell you the amount of people trying to get them.
Yeah.
But the good thing about that is that more people went back to walking.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know a lot of players that said, you know, I always used to ride a cart.
Right.
Then a pandemic came. I couldn't ride. I walked, and I realized, man, this is much more enjoyable walking.
Yeah, 100%.
So you're going to see a lot of people going back to walking, and I think that's great for all our health.
Yeah, I think that you know, the golf cart sort of is like the fast food of golf. Because you're racing, right? You're racing, and you're not enjoying, right? You cook a meal at home. You're putting it together. You're talking. You're listening to music. You're drinking some wine. When you're walking down the fairway, you're talking to your partner. You're relaxed. You're taking in the whole atmosphere. You're not racing to your ball and sitting, and you know what I mean. It does a lot of wonders for the pace of play and just adding to the relaxation. Of the round.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
And you're right. Just like cooking a meal at home, but
feel
like cooking a meal at home, you're a little tired afterwards.
Exactly. No, it's true. Masters. Hideki Matsuyama. Really fun. You know, happy for him. Obviously. Actually, happy for Japan. Right. They had the winner of the women's amateur, and then him. So they got the 1-2 covered win and place, I guess that's called, or two wins.
Well, it's two wins. Is that win and place? Two wins.
Yeah. So good.
Fantastic.
For them.
Fantastic.
And by all accounts, Hideki, obviously a very shy guy, but a good guy, a generous guy. But you know, he's got that interesting swing at the top, the pause at the top of his swing. Be interested to see how, you know, I'm always interested to see how those guys get fitted for clubs and how they change their equipment for, like, the Masters.
I think they change it less than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they may change a wedge or put a hybrid instead of a fairway or something like that for certain golf courses. But, they have to play very similar games where they go. They got to hit the ball much higher.
They got to
spin it a ton. You know, from an equipment standpoint, I think they change less than you think. And I know this, that the equipment companies and the slowest weeks of the year are the major weeks.
Right.
Because those guys are all grinding it out, and they are not switching equipment, thinking about experimenting with new stuff. They got to, you know, kind of, you know, play with what they brought with them.
Yeah, dance with what you came with.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point, right? You sort of have to have that. There's a fine line between tinkering too much and having just enough. Like you said, you have to adapt to an ever-changing condition, or at least certain golf courses. Obviously, the Masters being one. I would say the Open Championship over across the pond is another. Those two, maybe a U.S. Open, if depending on the how thick the rough is. So there is some adaptation, if you will.
There is. I think the thing is that they, like you, like the average golfer should, these guys have all thought of this in advance.
Right.
So they're thinking about the Open Championship, I'm going to need a driving iron to tee off with because I've got to hit something low and running.
Right.
They've already got that in their bag.
Right.
And they're not playing
right.
with it because,
right.
you know, Augusta, you don't need that golf club.
Right.
But they've already tried, you know, 100 of them,
right.
found the one that's going to work right, the right shaft, the right loft, every right combination for them,
right.
so that they have that golf club when it comes time, and they're not going to a major championship going, oh, I got to learn how to use this club. No,
right.
they've had it, and they've practiced with it. So it's able to fit right in their bag. If they've got an extra wedge, something with less bounce or something like that, they're practicing with that wedge
right.
so that when the tournament time comes, they got that hard conditions, like, oh, I need to use that lower bounce wedge. They know exactly how it works. They're not just adding it
right.
at the last second.
Sure, sure. So right, they've been on the range playing with that that driving iron and getting it dialed in for the Open Championship, which is
yes,
way in advance.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right,
a good point.
Right. They're doing that stuff now for something that's going to happen in 2 months.
Right, right, exactly. All right, well, we're going to take a short break. When we're back, you're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit PetesGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Malvies Equipment Company is the oldest distributor of power equipment on Long Island and has been serving the community for over 100 years. We have two locations for your convenience in Riverhead and Hicksville. Malvies Equipment offers a diversified line of quality products for golf, sports, and turf, including Jacobson, Redexum, Vertidrain, Smithco, and Turfco. We also carry Mahindra and New Holland tractors and construction equipment. Visit our website at malvisequipment.com or call us at 516-681-7600.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Fochel with Mizuno. There's no better feeling than having your clubs perfectly dialed in, and with over 2,000 authorized performance fitting partners nationwide, it couldn't be any easier to get custom fit using Mizuno's revolutionary Shaft Optimizer 3D. Find the right shaft and match it with any of our legendary grain flow forgings or our award-winning hot metal irons featuring high-strength chromoly. Visit MizunoGolf.com to find the nearest authorized fitter in your area. And remember, nothing feels like a Mizuno.
All right. Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. Across from me is co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, Woody Lashin, and on the phone is the head superintendent of Fresh Meadow Country Club, Joe Gardner. Joe, how you doing, man?
Morning, Anthony. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Wanted to start with you in terms of, first of all, you know, how you been? Like, how was the winter? I know you want to, the winter's usually some, you want to do some, have some downtime and maybe get some, some infrastructure done, but, given the challenges of the year, how was your winter different than previous?
Well, we had more snow this year than we have in the past 3 to 5, so I'll start with the obvious answer. It was a pretty normal winter. You know, last year's pandemic issues got better for us towards the end of the golf season in 2020, and then the winter time was somewhat normal. So we got some things done that we wanted to get done, and here we are, it's April already, so winter's come and gone, and it was very productive from a work standpoint, but kind of quiet from a personal standpoint.
Nice. Well, it's good good opportunity to recharge the batteries. I've been feeling for the golf course superintendents in general, because you go from the pandemic, which is certainly maybe a labor issue to now, obviously what happened with the Suez Canal and plus the pandemic with supply chain issues. And I'm just wondering, you know, golf courses are super labor intensive. You also need inputs to put into the golf course. It's sort of like do you feel like you can't win in recent times?
I think every year at this time, we all feel like we can't win because we're scrambling for, whether it's a seasonal labor or we're trying to fill an assistant spot or trying to bring in interns or whatever that gap is that you're trying to fill on the staff. It always seems to be escalated between March and June. Mm-hmm. But by the time we get to June, you know, middle of June, towards the end of June, everybody kind of gets those gaps filled and everybody kind of settles down a little bit. But you're right, though. It's extremely labor-intensive, and the expectation from the golfer side doesn't seem to be dying down. you know, they're always wanting more. So it's a challenge. It's a real challenge, but, you know, it's everybody's getting used to it, and we've got to find different ways to fill those voids with seasonal workers.
Joe, in the equipment industry, we've been having a hard time getting stuff. You know, it's taking the lead times are, you know, 3, 4, 5 times maybe what they used to be.
Sure.
I'm curious from the golf course standpoint, like, are there fertilizers or chemicals that you need to have now and they're telling you maybe we're not going to get them to you until June or anything that could really cause problems where you just can't get stuff that you need?
Right. No, that's a good question. I've been fortunate. I'm sure there's guys that have struggled with certain things, but from even like last year, we were concerned, right? We were worried about, are we going to get what we need? Are suppliers going to be delivering? Are we going to be on time with everything? And I think the suppliers were feeling the same thing. You know, are these clubs going to take what they purchased? Are they going to purchase at the same rate? So it was going back and forth. So we had a good year in 2020, and I think things kind of hit a bit of a wall this winter with, I think, maybe some iron products, and I think that's probably what you're dealing with too, but like the equipment. So I know there's a big backlog with Toro, and I'm not sure about the other companies. I deal specifically with Toro, but I mean, they had a hard time getting some equipment delivered that we ordered in January, you know, this year. So we just got it this year. So it took them 4 months to get turned around. So I think there definitely are certain aspects of the business where you're seeing that lag time with whether it's building, supply and demand, or getting it delivered.
Is the and the winter, though, too, is when you sort of replace, repair. I assume then most golf courses, some are not as fortunate as others, or have different budget levels. I'm assuming that really puts a strain on the repair side as opposed to the replace side.
Yeah, I think so, Anthony. I mean, there's certain companies that dealt with that, but you know, we're lucky to have different avenues, right? So we've got different vendors that we can get stuff from. I mean, obviously there's specialty items that you can't get from other people or other manufacturers, so you're going to have to wait. But, you know, I think the longest thing that we waited on from a repairs perspective over the winter months was maybe 2 weeks. So, you know, how spoiled are we? You know, we live in a world of we want it now, you know. So
right.
I think that, you know, waiting 2 weeks is okay. We can live with that.
So one of the things I get asked about all the time, and I thought maybe we could take a little dive into it, is aeration. You know, people don't understand why you have to do it. You know, they go out in the golf course this time of year, they're like, oh, but it's aerated, it's bumpy. Why do they have to do that? Can you just tell us a little bit about why we have to do it and how often we have to do it and, you know,
sure.
What the reasoning is?
It's funny that we talked about this last time I was on the show too, because it was spring, but people hate aeration. it's a necessary evil. We hate it too. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Right.
It's not like we're riding around with our feet up. You know, we've got to cram a lot of work in 2, 3, 4 days, and everybody's itching to get out and play golf, and they want the golf course to be pristine. Some people coming back from Florida, coming off great conditions, and they come to an aerated golf course. I'm like, what's going on? But it's necessary for us to kind of get things reset and ready to go for the season's environmental impact and even player impact, right? So the compaction between foot traffic and the mowing and the rolling and the cart traffic and all the other things that happened throughout the, you know, 5, 6, 7 months that we're up and running with golf, that's a chance for us to get the root systems healthy, get some amendments in the ground, get some sand out, and really kind of get the greens, fairways, tees, a lot of our fine turf areas really ramped up for all the pounding it's going to take throughout the season. So that's the necessary evil, and we do it at my club here at Fresh Meadow. We do it twice a year. We do it spring and we do it fall, and I try to get it out of the way as early as I can so it's impacting as few players as possible. So we do it early April, and then we don't do our fall aeration until we have the Sarazen Invitational at the end of October, we take on the fall aeration at the end of October, early November. So we try to do it at the least impacted time of the year, but you always still get a few people that are overly concerned about why we have to do it. But it's a necessary evil, and it's the reason why golf courses are so good, because guys conduct those practices.
I guess one of the questions they would ask is so you just did an aeration, what, probably 2 weeks ago maybe?
Yes, last week.
Last week, okay. So like, how long can they expect the golf course to heal this time of year? I mean, is it, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or is it so hard, it's so weather-dependent? Is there an answer?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of guys, it is weather-dependent. You know, if you get some cool weather in the springtime, you know, it takes a little bit longer to heal, but things are really pushing right now. We've had some good rain, and we've had some decent weather, but it's typically that two-week period. You know, you get, it's unless you're really, really pushing it with fertilizers or other products that may stimulate growth, you can really expect a two-week window for that healing process to take place.
Joe, just real quick before we get to the LI Open, I'm just curious for the average people listening, is there different kinds of aeration? Obviously, I know there's sort of like an industry term, sort of a drill and fill, but then sometimes golfers are on golf courses where there's just little slices. Is there different variations of aeration, and what might be the thought behind the different techniques?
Yeah, no, there's many different types. You know, they've invented so many different ways to impact things over the years. Yeah, and a lot of the things that we're trying to implement these days is the least disruptive, right? So
sure.
we're looking at whether it's a smaller hole instead of this big hole that's intrusive and takes 3 weeks to heal up. We're trying to do things. Maybe we do it. Maybe sometimes we may do it more often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beginning of the season or even mid-season, and everybody does it different. But we're trying to do it where it's as least disruptive for the shortest amount of period of time.
Right.
But we're also trying to impact a certain percentage of surface area to really make sure we're improving the health of the turf. You know, we're going after organic matter, and we're trying to improve our root structure and system, and then also incorporate whether it's sand or other amendments to improve the growing medium that we're growing our grass in. So,
right.
It's funny, yes. So I just recently did what they call the grading process. And the grading process is like an aggressive verticutting. So it's a vertical, like, mowing type of practice. And what it does is it's like a saw blade, and it's a 2 millimeter blade, 2 millimeter wide, and it goes down about a half to three quarters of an inch. And what it does is just really kind of remove, organic matter, right? So it doesn't poke a hole or create this half inch or 5/8 inch hole. It just kind of goes into the top of the surface and cuts this hole, or cuts this line, and removes the thatch. And the reason why I did that was because I've emitted my soils at 3 inches so much that I just wanted to impact the top half to three quarters of an inch, because I don't want to pull all the sand out that I keep on putting in. I just want to attack that thatch layer that we may have a problem with in the summer months.
That's great stuff. Do you do stuff like even on a Monday, like with the small needles and stuff like that? Do you do that that people don't even realize that you've done?
I think that's called tining, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. I like to think I know enough to be dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not even dangerous. <my knowledge.
laughs> No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. No, but yeah, 100%. There's, I mean, I think, you know, throughout the season, even, prior to if you have golf outings or if you're lucky enough to have your course closed on Mondays, guys go out and they do, the needle tining, right? So this needle tine is like a 3/8 inch tine that goes down. It just breaks the surface, right? So you're only going down maybe, an inch and a half, and you're penetrating the thatch in the top surface of your canopy on putting greens, just to allow them to breathe, and it kind of just it almost makes them a little bit more pliable from accepting water, and maybe breaks up some compaction from foot traffic and whatnot. So, you know, guys are top dressing too, right? They're putting out sand in the season to help mitigate thatch buildup, and it just helps with smoothing surfaces. Guys are spiking and rolling. So we do all kinds of different things throughout the season that a lot of guys don't notice, and they're very not disruptive, which has been good. So it's helped a lot to keep putting surfaces a little bit more accepting to some of the foot traffic, and especially it sounds like we're going to have another busy year of golf, because I think a lot of people are still up in the air about how they feel about the pandemic and traveling and working from home and being on the golf course more. So we're going to continue to do that stuff to keep greens in as best shape we can.
Absolutely. We only have a few minutes left, but I do want to talk about the LI Open. Obviously, Fresh Meadow is already a quality venue, no question about that. But can you talk a little bit about some of the nuances that you might be changing amongst the course just to get ready for the LI Open?
Yeah, there's really not a lot, Anthony. You know, it's we kind of approach it as we always do, you know, and we try and set a standard that we're producing these types of conditions all the time for our membership.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I think a lot of the changes and what we'll do will probably be within the next, about two to three weeks leading up to it, whether we, you know, let the rough grow a little bit or, how often we're mowing things to make sure that, we're keeping the conditioning, right where we want it, whether we go out with a growth regulator, a little bit heavier to slow some of the turf down, to tighten things up. But for at this point of the year, I guess the only thing that we're really working on is bunkers. You know, we've addressed some of our bunkers last year as far as recapturing some sizes. We've added some sand and whatnot. So we're going to be working over the next few weeks to really make sure that they're in good shape playability-wise leading up to that event.
I think as someone who's played Fresh Meadow a bunch of times, what Joe said is right. Is you go play on a Tuesday afternoon, he's trying to give you the best conditions, just like you're going playing in the LI Open. Now,
yep.
They might have a little tougher pins for the LI Open they do on a Tuesday afternoon.
Right.
But the course is in the same shape. The greens are about the same speed. Maybe you'll throw the rough a little higher, maybe, but, you know.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
I think it's already hard enough.
It's a tough golf course. It definitely is.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to the last couple of minutes? What are you keeping your eye out for this year coming up? Is there anything that you, as a golf course superintendent and golf course superintendents across Long Island, that are trying to anticipate? If you can anticipate, you're dealing with Mother Nature, doesn't always cooperate. But, what do you have your eye out on as the year evolves?
Well, really, Anthony, I'm hoping to get back to some normalcy.
Yeah.
I think, you know, everybody in our industry was really, listen, we were fortunate. We were extremely fortunate that we were able to work and go to work and keep our routine. We work outside and we were able to, practice all the things that we were being told. And, you know, we were extremely fortunate. But at the same time, a long year. it was a long year last year. It was busy. There was a lot of golf. There was, an evolution or constant changes happening all the time that we had to keep up with, along with keeping our employees safe, ourselves safe, and, being mindful about what we're bringing home to our families. So I think getting back to some normalcy and getting back to having association outings and seeing guys and being more social and just, not feeling constrained or pent up or tied up. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
But on a personal note, I'm looking forward to June. My daughter gets to graduate high school and go to college. So that's one of my personal things.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
And that's awesome. A nice little milestone to celebrate.
Yes.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate everything that you do. Look forward to seeing you at Fresh Meadow for the LI Open. Maybe we'll have a chance to have a cigar. And I also am looking forward to the LI Golf Course Superintendent Association events as well. I kind of miss those too. I like seeing the guys as well as you do. So we're looking, like you said, hoping to return to normalcy. And thanks again for everything.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great one, and we'll see you soon.
Be well.
You know, Anthony, the golf course superintendent, I think, is a lot of times forgotten.
Oh, 100%.
You're out there playing golf, and you don't realize how much work has to go in to make that golf course in the condition that it is that you can go and enjoy it.
And that's because their work is done before you even get there.
Yes,
and they don't, and that's the reason
before you
why.
Even awake. Sometimes
exactly. We have 1 minute left, but I know you on a personal and professional. The Richardson, now part of Wheatley's regular schedule. That you're looking forward to that?
I am looking forward to it. It's the first amateur tournament of the year.
Yep.
Going to be held at Wheatley Hills again. We didn't have it last year because of the pandemic, but we had it 2 years ago, and it's something that's. Hopefully going to be at Wheatley every year going forward. Kind of kicks off the season.
Oh, everybody. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but the Richardson is like the Masters for local.
No,
seriously. On the sense that starts off the amateur schedule.
I'm not sure. What do you mean? Those two words in the same sentence.
No, but I mean, in the sense that it does kick off.
Yes.
It kicks off
the Long Island golf season.
Kicks off the Long Island golf season for the professional amateur who likes to participate in those events. That's the first one of the year. So people are getting ready for that. In the same way, I know it's not the Masters, but who doesn't like a little hyperbole? So,
absolutely.
All right. Thanks for joining us, folks. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.